Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We begin this morning with the massacre that occurred at that Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin, yesterday afternoon, just west of Milwaukee. Waukesha is about an hour north of Kenosha. Yesterday afternoon, Christmas parade, downtown Waukesha, and a guy plows through the middle of the parade, killing five, as is reported at present, injuring another 40. Both of those numbers could increase before all is said and done.
And the video is just heartbreaking, and just you freeze in your spot when you're watching it. I mean, the first thing when he entered the scene, he almost hit a little toddler who was wearing a pink jumpsuit. And then he apparently, according to one witness, ran into a baseball team that was marching down, you know, as part of the parade. And one of the dads pulled his son, threw his son out of the way and took the brunt of the force. So we know that some victims are adults and some victims are kids.
So five dead, 40 injured, at least. Those are the numbers. It immediately goes to persons in custody, understanding of motive. Well, there is a person in custody. His name is Daryl Brooks. And what we know about him so far is that he's some sort of half-ass rapper with a long criminal history and also a history of posting on social media. You always go to social media in these situations. And among his posts on social media was about the Rittenhouse verdict. Clearly, he wasn't on that side. Has been about BLM in a positive way. Has been Scott Walker in a Nazi uniform.
Oh boy!
So this is what we know. Now, he has not been charged as of yet. I assume if this is the person in that Ford Escape, and there's some pictures that suggest that it is, that they're just working to put together all of the charges that he will be facing. So in custody. Not yet charged.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Before we get to that, this is one of the witnesses who was at the parade.
We saw him swerve right into the children from the baseball team, the parents that were marching with him. The one father of the baseball team had pushed his child out of the way, and he took the blunt end of the vehicle. He went down. And all chaos just erupted.
The person in custody is a resident of Milwaukee. He has open charges filed this month, November 5th, in Milwaukee courts for resisting an officer, misdemeanor, felony bail jumping, second degree recklessly endangering safety, domestic abuse assessments, disorderly conduct, and battery. He posted $1,000 cash bail on November 19th.
Of course he did.
That despite the fact he has another open felony case in Milwaukee County from 2020. That case for second degree recklessly endangering safety, felony with the use of a dangerous weapon, two counts, and possessing a firearm when having been convicted of a felony, which is a felony charge. Milwaukee County. Here's a familiar story. DA there.
Yeah, who's the DA? Yeah.
John Chrisholm is another Soros affiliate. He's bragged about abolishing bail, and he's congratulated other Soros-funded DAs like our very own Kim Fox here in Cook County. Well, this is what you have in Waukesha. What the motivation was, don't know yet.
Yeah, police don't know. They're questioning it right now.
But, you know, social media plus the context, he's got a significant criminal history. He maybe, arguably, shouldn't have been out on bail as recently as November. 3 days ago. $1,000 bail on Friday.
Good Lord.
And on Sunday, he's plowing into a crowd of families enjoying a Christmas parade.
It's just, you become numb. It's and why? Why did he do it? Could would be there, conjecture on our part, but yeah.
There was an intern from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel who was in Waukesha to watch the parade with her mother and stepfather. She was standing with her family on the main street along with other families, many with young children lined up, two rows deep in some places, watching the parade. About half an hour into the parade, just after the Waukesha Extreme Dance Team, a middle school dance group, went by, she heard screaming, saw the SUV come down the street. She saw the vehicle hit some people. It all happened so fast, it kept going and definitely did not stop. People fled into storefronts. Her mother and stepfather ran over to people. And there was some confusion, understandably, in the midst of all this. There were initial reports that there was possible gunfire as well, that the assailant was shooting out of the car. That later was essentially recanted by police, who said it were police officers that fired on the car to try to get it to stop.
And she said, "Please pray. My family's safe, but many are not. I held one little girl's head in my hand. She was seizing and she was bleeding out of her ears. I held her mother as she collapsed. Please pray."
So this, by the way, since we are forced to talk about race in these matters rather than conduct. Okay, talk about race. He's a black dude, the person in custody. And I say that because as we get to the Rittenhouse verdict and the reaction to the verdict over the weekend, it's all based on race. And it's all the angry white man is the scariest thing in the West. And essentially all white men are angry is the implication being offered by these race-hustling demagogues on the cable news networks.
Who are just liars. They continued the lie, too, about, his mom drove him with the weapon. No, she did not drive him off.
And so we'll see, you know, we try to exercise restraint here. We'll see. But we know what the left does in these situations, and we'll see how the left reacts as this picture comes into focus, whether or not this is the individual who will subsequently be charged. And all indications are that it is, and he will be today.
How is BLM going to react to this, Dan?
And the motivations.
They're in Kenosha last night protesting. Is the BLM going to go to Waukesha now? What are they going to do? This traveling group of protesters.
We'll continue to update the stories. I'm sure Mike Scott will as the morning progresses. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, we're talking about Waukesha before Mike Scott's newscast. And I have to say, I'll go wherever the facts lead. I always do. But this reporting that the suspect appears to have been fleeing another scene.
Yeah, some stabbing or something.
Law enforcement official quoted as saying it's not an act of terrorism. Really, he was fleeing another scene, and the only escape route was through a crowd down Main Street in Waukesha. Mm. And the reports of him swerving into people.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Okay, but, you know, this like, according to an unnamed law enforcement official, this and that. I'll tell you what, I assume there'll be a law enforcement briefing today, then lay it out. If you want us to, you know, believe this wasn't an act of domestic terrorism, then lay out exactly what you are suggesting happened and why it happened. All these anonymous law enforcement officials, according to a source, that doesn't strike me as plausible, but maybe it is. Maybe it's what happened. Sometimes the implausible is what the truth is. We'll see. But I just want to sort of highlight this reporting going on right now that is, in my mind, I don't care if they have an unnamed law enforcement official, highly speculative in the, you know, few hours since this massacre occurred. Okay, said my piece on that. Let's turn to the Rittenhouse not guilty verdict on Friday. As we anticipated on this show, he would be acquitted. Took longer than was necessary, but the jury wanted to be thorough. Understand that. Before we get to the reactions from all of the punditocracy and these morons who by some hook or crook actually have platforms where they have audiences. How about hearing from Kyle Rittenhouse? Because we haven't heard from him except on the witness stand. Well, Tucker Carlson apparently had a film crew embedded with Team Rittenhouse for the duration of the trial. Because he has a Tucker Carlson original that is coming out in December. He has an interview with Rittenhouse tonight on his show, and he teased both. This is from the Tucker Carlson original, the longer form version of the sort of Rittenhouse saga from beginning to Friday. And here's Tucker Carlson's perspective with Rittenhouse going all the way up to Rittenhouse's reaction on Friday in the car after he was acquitted.
It's the stuff that keeps you up at night. Like, once you finally do get to sleep, your dreams are about what happened, and you're waking up in a dark, cold sweat.
Yeah. You had dreams about what happened?
Every single night. It's quite scary, actually, because the dreams feel so real, and they're not the same at all. They're all different. They're the different scenarios that run through your head during the day, like what could have happened. Like, I'm alive, but what could have happened? Like, what if I wasn't alive, or what if I did let Mr. Rosenbaum steal my gun? It's those type of dreams of the outcome of... It's bad, but almost every outcome is either me getting seriously injured or hurt or dead. Those are just the dreams I have on a daily basis.
The defendant will rise, face the jury, and hearken to its verdicts.
State of Wisconsin versus Kyle Rittenhouse. As to the first count of the information, Joseph Rosenbaum, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty. As to the second count of the information, Richard McGinnis, we, the jury, find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty.
How do you feel, man?
The jury reached the correct verdict. Self-defense is not illegal. And I believe they came to the correct verdict, and I'm glad that everything went well. And it's been a rough journey, but we made it through it. We made it through the hard part.
And it turns out, apparently, that Rittenhouse has been treated, is being treated currently for PTSD, psychological issues that he's having, the dreams he talked about with respect to what happened that night.
He can't sleep at night.
In addition to that, we get a tease from the interview that will be on Tucker's show tonight with Rittenhouse, in which he talks about prosecutorial misconduct and, you know, the characterization of him as some sort of white supremacist or racist.
This case has nothing to do with race. It never had anything to do with race. It had to do with the right to self-defense.
Right.
I'm not a racist person. I support the BLM movement. I support peacefully demonstrating. And I believe there needs to be change. I believe there's a lot of prosecutorial misconduct, not just in my case, but in other cases. And it's just amazing to see how much a prosecutor can take advantage of somebody.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. You've been waiting all weekend. Your reaction to the verdict, as well as to the reactions over the weekend to the verdicts, including the protests in places like Chicago and New York, and, of course, the customary violence. Did people in Portland have nothing better to do than deface property?
Right, and smash police cars. Yeah, windows out of police cars.
Give them a reason.
Well, give anybody a reason, and that we had one here in Chicago. Hold on, you can hear for yourself. The only solution is communist resolution. And if you think this is about Trump or anything, it's not. They were chanting unkind words to both President Trump and President Biden.
Trump, Biden, Trump. They don't give a fuck about Trump.
There's too many bleeps. It's not even worth playing. But no arrests were made. There was a little scuffle and one time with one of the BLM protesters and police, but no arrests were made.
Yeah, so take notice of who's protesting.
Yeah, it's BLM.
Stop White Supremacy, Response to Whitehouse Verdict. This is the flyer that for a Federal Plaza protest on Saturday. Regardless of the outcome, we're hitting the streets to protest this racist injustice system. As I said, give them a reason. You know, the only solution is communist revolution, the organizing group, the Party for Socialism and Liberation. They're telling you they're just using the Rittenhouse trial as an opportunity to get attention for their, you know, larger communist revolution. But that's who we're talking about here. We're talking about people that just don't believe in the American representative republic, that don't believe in our justice system. This has nothing to do, and they demonstrated they know very little about the particulars of this trial, so I don't even know why they get coverage.
Well, their plan now is an economic boycott of those who supported Rittenhouse. They had a huge rally. Yeah. No, that's their plan. Yeah, the Bishop Travis Grant.
All two of them.
Is this the country that you want? Because this is not the country that we want. We want equal protection under the law. The fact that Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum was white, racism is more deadly than COVID. It is indiscriminate. It just affect white people. It affects all of humanity.
So they're going to just go after anybody who donated money to Kyle Rittenhouse or his defense fund. That's what they, and then Reverend Jackson is, you know, meeting with other congressional leaders to review the case, or asking the Department of Justice to open up a case review.
All the pro forma sideshow bobs out there with their little gaggle of communists and subversives who get cameras so they make grandiose statements that don't amount to a hill of beans. They're going to boycott this. They're going to boycott that. Although it would be nice on a serious note, because those are not serious people. On a serious note, we profiled them in this show. The Norfolk, Virginia Police Lieutenant William Kelly, who was fired for making a $25 donation to Kyle Rittenhouse's legal defense fund and is currently seeking reinstatement. It'd be nice if Norfolk, Virginia Police Department did the right thing there. Oh, by the way, another footnote in that story. The police chief in Norfolk, Virginia, apparently at some other event, was decked out in BLM garb. So BLM garb is okay. That's not, you know, running afoul of the police conduct rules and so forth. But making a $25 anonymous donation gets you fired.
Come on.
That's the serious business.
And then you're going to have these people allegedly go after you.
Governor Pritzker offered a statement on Kyle Rittenhouse. Carrying a loaded gun into a community 20 miles from your home and shooting unarmed citizens is fundamentally wrong. It's a tragedy that the court could not acknowledge that basic fact. 26-year-old Anthony Huber and 36-year-old Joseph Rosenbaum, a father, had their whole lives ahead of them. They deserve to be alive today. They deserve justice. My thoughts and prayers go out to all who love them. We must do better than this. That's a remarkable statement for the governor. I expect the anti-gun and anti-self-defense rhetoric. I expect the lying, calling them unarmed. I expect that from Spalding and these other leftists. But to lionize these predators, sexual and otherwise, Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum, a domestic abuser, a pedophile, to lionize them as young men with great promise, that's really something. That is next level demagoguery by Governor Spalding. And I just want to recognize him, congratulate him for next level demagoguery, maybe the most idiotic statement issued by anyone in the country in response to the verdict. Let's give it up for Governor Jellybelly. Congratulations, because the people of Illinois love it and will remember this statement when he gets reelected in 2 years.
This is why I hope to God he doesn't get reelected. He should apologize to everyone who is sexually abused or molested in their lives, because he defended a beast, a serial child molester, 11 counts, anally raped a 9-year-old who had to go to the hospital because they had to get stitches. I mean, this guy was sick in the head. But here's the thing.
You focus on all the bad things with Jacob Rosenbaum. What about the great things? He was a father, a young man. He had such great promise.
He just got out of the psych ward that night because he was bipolar. And I'll tell you, too, the loaded gun, he didn't carry the loaded gun. First of all, his mom did not drop him off, so stop it. I had to deal with that with my church people yesterday. Stop that narrative. That is a lie. And he did not carry the loaded gun. His friend who legally owned the gun brought it to Kenosha. Why would he cross state lines? His dad lived there. His grandma lived there. He worked in Kenosha. Just stop. God. Uh-huh. And White, Lightfoot wasn't, you know, she's like, I'm aware of the jury's verdict and we must respect the jury's decision. However, no one should ever take the law into their own hands or attempt to make themselves the judge, jury, and executioner. What Kyle Rittenhouse did was reckless, dangerous, and showed an utter disregard for human life. And then she wanted to let us also remember and pray for Jacob Blake and his family as he continues his journey of rehabilitation.
That's a nice effort on behalf of Lightfoot. But I mean, it pales in comparison to the Governor Jelly Belly statement.
Yeah.
Spalding hit it out of the park. Again, congratulations. He deserves some kind of lifetime achievement award at the next banquet for the new Marxists or some such thing.
He didn't even realize who he was defending. I mean, three convicted felons. We went over what they did.
Who didn't realize who he was defending?
Pritzker.
How do you
think
know that?
He didn't? Because I don't think he's that smart, Dan, and his handlers do everything for him.
You have to be smart to know who these people are with all the coverage. How do you know he didn't know? You don't know that.
I don't know that. I'm
right.
Just...
So don't say that you do. He did that willingly. That's who he is.
Well, his ignorance makes me sick.
He says it's not ignorant. This is what he believes. Well, I mean, yeah. Okay, he's an empty vessel, and this is what he's saying because he thinks it panders to the right audience. Fine, whatever. That's what he stated. He stated that is his position. Accept it.
Well, I think
stated position.
I think he had one of his handlers write that for him. I don't think he actually sat there before Mickey Mouse came to town for the Festival of Lights parade. I don't think that he wrote that. He signed off on it. Yeah, sure, because they told him to, because he's just an empty vessel and he's a mimbo. And he's ignorant. And he owes every single child in the state of Illinois who was molested an apology.
All right, so this is Mark Richards on with Fredo on Friday night after the verdict, talking about the media's coverage of this, that what they were saying was untrue and the hurdle they had to clear at trial to get to the truth.
The narrative that came out was not the truth. At trial, it did come out. He had lived in that community. He had worked in that community. His family, his dad, his grandmother, aunts, uncles lived in that community. He spent a lot of time there. He went down there earlier in the day to help clean up graffiti, do those things. And when he was asked to help out at Car Source, he went. And, you know, so much was made that he wasn't an EMT. He did help people there. Nobody was harmed by Kyle Rittenhouse putting bandages or gauze on. And he went around seeking to help people. They wanted to portray him as a liar and, fireman wannabe. I don't think that's what it was, but that was the narrative they needed to put forth to try and get a conviction on Kyle Rittenhouse.
Does he...
And other thing I understand is that now he wants to be a nurse. He's studying to be a nurse at Arizona State.
Mm-hmm. Doing classes online right now.
Clay and Wheeling, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan, maybe. There is only one cure for pedophilia, and it's a pill bottle full of 9mm, and you apply it directly to the head. That is my opinion. Second, my friend's father is a public defender, and he said that the way this prosecution acted towards Kyle Rittenhouse, this prosecution knew full well that they did not have any case at all. Right. They had no case, and that he solely relied on every single dirty trick in the book, even going all the way down to the Fifth Amendment. And Kyle Rittenhouse's use of the Fifth Amendment to try to ploy it and spin it and make it out to be like he is the worst guy in the world. He said that this prosecution is absolutely disgusting, and it's amazing at all that this guy will have a career after this. Thanks, guys.
Well, he should give his law degree back to University of Michigan. Binger.
Tom in Blue Island.
Dan and Amy, good morning. I was in Kenosha all week. Kyle Rittenhouse was on trial for interfering with the mob. He wasn't on trial for shooting anyone. There were no riots in Kenosha. not one. And the reason is because the protesters saw early Friday afternoon after the trial, the police presence, and they saw they were not going to be allowed to do what they want to do and what they did here in Chicago and wherever else. This is Marxist. Eddie, those communist chants, those need to be listened to. That's the goal. These people are idiots at these protests, but their leaders aren't idiots.
All right, Tom, thanks for the call. Nation in Aurora.
Hi, how are you guys? Anyway, so what is it with this governor and the mayor of Chicago criticizing this young man and all that has gone on all day and all night in Chicago? Babies, 3 months old, sitting in their car seats, shot, and just people shot in broad daylight now, and nothing happens to these creepy criminals. What is wrong with black people? They are being used by these communists. Used. All right.
Thanks for the call, Nation. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, more really powerhouse intellectual stuff from Governor Spaulding.
Yeah.
But you do have to give him credit. He did show Governor Rauner, you know, as an old money trust fund baby, he did show the merely $900 million Governor Rauner what the meaning of the word parvenu is. But hopefully Ken Griffin, who I read an article over the weekend or last month or whatever, is looking at spending some money, I guess, in terms of dealing or moving Citadel out of Illinois is what I heard. Hopefully he shows him. Hopefully Mr. Griffin and others show him what the meaning of the word plutocrat is in 2022.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Tom in Deer Park.
Yeah, I'm enamored that Kyle Rittenhouse was exonerated. It was the correct thing to do. Additionally, I've been disgusted since this thing started with left-leaning media and specifically some of the politicians and specifically the ones you mentioned, the governor of our state and our mayor. Additionally, some of the right-wing media has been appalling with what they've done with this stuff. And I just wish this kid, the last place that he should go is Tucker Carlson. If he's listening, I hope he takes my advice. Don't get involved.
It's already done.
Tucker's got the biggest audience and the most dishonest guy in right-wing media out there.
Okay, Tom, I know you're just despondent over the departure of Jonah Goldberg and Steve Hayes as Fox News contributors. That's the real important story to Never Trumpers like Tom. In terms of the media, this was interesting. Former New York Times reporter Nellie Bowles went on to Barry Weiss's Substack channel, Common Sense, and said that the New York Times held her story about the ravaging effects of the Kenosha riots on impoverished neighborhoods in the area until after the elections in 2020. She said she was sent to report on the mainstream liberal argument that vandalizing buildings for racial justice was not detrimental because businesses had insurance. Bowles wrote, "It turned out not to be true. The part of Kenosha that people burned in the riots was the poor multiracial commercial district full of small, uninsured cell phone shops and car lots. It was very sad to see and hear from people who had suffered." And the New York Times held that story until after the election because the New York Times is the paper of record, the gray lady, the champion of the little person against the assembled power structure in whatever its current form is. Right. Right. In the tank, every aspect, all the time, 24/7 journalism. And by the way, Nellie Bowles is no hero in this story. I mean, it just shows you the depths to which journalism has sank that Nellie Bowles is like, oh, hey, well, at least thanks for reporting the story properly. And now, I don't know, 18 months later, coming out and saying the New York Times spiked the story until after the election because they're in the tank for Biden and they were in the tank for the prosecution against Rittenhouse.
And Wisconsin was a swing state. They had to win Wisconsin.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Don't get mad at self-defense trick. get mad. Don't get mad, it's self-defense trick. Popping comments with the Mac if they tripping. I'm in the right and they mad because I'm innocent. I'm innocent.
Was Alexander. He of one of those chart-topping Let Go Brandon songs.
Oh,
Let's
right.
Go Brandon songs as a new theme music for Kyle Rittenhouse out in the market. We'll see if that goes to the top of iTunes like his Let's Go Brandon did. So let's talk about Kyle Rittenhouse. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. I think we talked quite a bit about the case and people's feelings about what should the verdict be. Got the verdict that I think most of the people we spoke with on this show agreed was the proper one. So now we get the reaction to it. And the reactions came swiftly on the usual stations. For example, NAACP president Derek Johnson, who was on with that Zerlina Maxwell on MSNBC. We talked about her last week. She's the one who wanted to explore toxic masculinity, really toxic white masculinity, as the source for violence in America. This is what the NAACP president had to say about the verdict.
With this outcome, we all witnessed and seen on screen what happened. But it's a true tale of what we need to do moving forward. Here's a judge that's been elected for the past 3 days, mostly unopposed. I hope that community take note and recognize that this particular judge is not providing justice for that community. In addition to that, the jury pool question is a real question that we must embrace in a way in which we increase the number of people who are registered to vote and willing to serve on juries. It was an injustice. This was worse than the Emmett Till trial. This was worse to so many trials where we know for a fact individuals committed murder and yet they were not brought to justice. And it's unfortunate, but this is America.
This is America. Worse than the Emmett Till trial.
Emmett Till, who was taken while he was sleeping, and they tied a cotton gin fan to him and put him down a river. He thinks it's worse than that?
It's worse than the Emmett Till trial.
Okay.
1955 Mississippi. He's lynched by white men for flirting with a girl in a grocery store. And the two men who lynched him are acquitted. The Rittenhouse verdict was worse than that. That trial was worse than the failure to do justice for Emmett Till in 1955 in Mississippi.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line.
See, here's the thing, and we've explained this before, so let's do it again. The race hustlers have to make 2021 America 1955 Mississippi. The left is addicted to the charge of racism. They're addicted to it. They need their fixes. And if there is no actual supply, then supply will be created to fill demand. Because if just a sliver of the left in this country, just a sliver, if they ever stopped believing that America was systemically racist and all its institutions, despite the fact they're controlled by the left, are systemically racist, if they ever stopped believing that and they started thinking that maybe people like Derek Johnson, the president of the NAACP, are greatly exaggerating the incidence of racial animus in this country, then Derek Johnson would be out of a job and a whole host of Marxist public officials would be out of elective offices.
It's a whole industry. I mean, it's a whole movement. It's a whole subculture. They can't let it go. They can't make race relations better because you're right. Bottom line about the money, and then they wouldn't have a job and they wouldn't have a purpose.
Katie Fang, She is some kind of legal contributor to MSNBC. Apparently, she's a lawyer, which is incredible when you after hearing these statements. Katie Fang on the verdict and why there were so few protests over the weekend in response to the verdict.
So the law in Wisconsin allowed for this self-defense claim to be completely obliterated if you followed the law on provocation. And so the jury, if it had followed the law on provocation, would have determined that Rittenhouse provoked what ended up happening, thereby negating any opportunity to be able to claim self-defense. Because the result from yesterday, I think there's a real reason why you didn't see a lot of protests yesterday, Tiffany. It's because if you went into the street after that verdict, you could be shot dead in the street and there would be no consequence.
Oh, come on.
This is who you're dealing with.
God, and she watched any of the trials. She would see Rosenblum, and they even had witnesses besides Kyle Rittenhouse up there saying that he was the antagonist. He was going after him, telling people psychotically, I'm going to kill you.
She got the law wrong.
Yes, she did.
The jury did take up the question of whether there was provocation that obviated Rittenhouse's, whether he was the provocateur that obviated his defense. And they decided that he didn't, and thus he was not guilty, that he was within his rights under the law to defend himself as he did. That's what they found. The trier of fact, Ms. Fang, apparently an officer of the court, determined that. That's number one. Number two, I mean, just the, you know, the sophistry. People aren't protesting because now the law is, and it hasn't changed, pre-Rittenhouse to post-Rittenhouse. Now the law is you can shoot people in the street without consequence.
Yeah.
That's the law in places like Chicago with Soros-funded prosecutors, maybe. But that's not the law as it's written on the statute books in Wisconsin or anywhere else. And Katie Fang knows that. She is a demagogue. Derek Johnson knows that this is not worse than the Emmett Till trial, for gosh sakes. But he's a demagogue.
So now what should Kyle Rittenhouse do? Sue these people for defamation of character? Should he sue then-candidate President Biden? Because his defense attorney had a message for President Biden.
President Biden said some things that I think are so incorrect and untrue. He's not a white supremacist. I'm glad that he at least respects the jury verdict. And if the government had any information regarding his cell phone or anything, that he had been to any of those websites or been online doing that kind of stuff, it would have been introduced in evidence. It wasn't. We were the individuals who released his cell phone, which couldn't be cracked by the FBI because we had nothing to hide.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. MSNBC, again, all weekend long, 24-7. 24-7, 365 anyway. This is just the issue du jour. MSNBC host Jason Johnson, who's some kind of half-assed professor, and Malcolm Nance, who you've heard on this show before, who's some kind of half-assed former CIA intelligence officer. I mean, again, listen to Malcolm Nance, and that will call into question the CIA screening process, that's for sure. I thought it was difficult to get a job at the CIA. Jason Johnson and Malcolm Nance on white supremacy, because that's the big takeaway here.
On this. Malcolm, I want to start with you. My primary concern about this ruling is that it is now open season and that white nationalists and domestic terrorists across this country are high-fiving. What kind of impact does a ruling like this have for everybody, from the Proud Boys to militia groups, from Savannah, South Carolina, to Seattle, Oregon, Seattle, Washington?
Well, let me confirm for you that they are high-fiving. They view this as a major victory. For some time, you know, the Free Kyle T-shirts and Kyle Did Nothing Wrong types of T-shirts have been going on have been inside the white supremacy movement and had mainstreamed itself into the Republican Party world. And by doing that, what they've done is that they have steeped Kyle Rittenhouse in the tea of white supremacy iconography, whether he wanted to be there or not. But what he did by his very action of going out, going to a protest across state lines, being within a group of armed men, performing what they call the Korean on the rooftop, right, defending a position, whether it's a business or other, where they were not invited, and then getting into this fight where he killed two men and wounded a third, that is now the template on how to protest against Antifa or Black Lives Matter or any other person that they consider in the white supremacy world race traitors.
There you go. I mean, it just will not stop until you confront people like this and make it stop. And I'm talking, and I'm talking about this intellectually before any one of our leftist trolls characterizes otherwise. I'm talking about when in conversations, because fortunately for you, you don't have to talk to Malcolm Nance or Jason Johnson. You certainly don't have to listen to them. But you're going to listen to people repeat those talking points that you heard from those two clowns or Katie Fang or Derek Johnson. You want this to stop? Then you better stand up and tell people to go pound sand when they should go pound sand, to tell them that they're all wet when they're all wet, to tell them they don't know the first thing about what they're talking about when they don't know the first thing about what they're talking about, as Malcolm Nance, the great intel officer, clearly doesn't. They weren't invited there. Kyle Rittenhouse was invited there to protect that car source. Just facts that are purposely misstated because they have a story. And despite the fact that there is no basis for the story, they're continuing to repeat it in different words.
And
they're continuing to say that Rittenhouse, you just heard it there, they're continuing to say Rittenhouse is part of this shadowy group of angry white men, and this is now the template to go after. Like there's going to be roving gangs of people looking to take out Black Lives Matter protesters or thugs. No. The call has been, if you've paid any attention for the last 2 years, the call has been for law enforcement and prosecutors to do their job to enforce the law. That's what the call has been, not for vigilante justice.
But they've said it so many times and repeated it so many different ways that I think they're actually believing it for some reason. And remember, Kyle said he's going to be, the full interview is going to be on with Tucker Carlson tonight, but he wanted this message out right away.
This case has nothing to do with race. It never had anything to do with race. It had to do with the right to self-defense.
Right.
I'm not a racist person. I support the BLM movement. I support peacefully demonstrating.
Yeah, and if he supports the BLM movement, then he's, you know, not particularly savvy. He doesn't know what he's talking about, or he's just pandering. I don't know which.
Don't
but
know.
Kyle Rittenhouse is, you know, 18-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse is a kid.
He's a baby.
And he doesn't know some things. He's not a hero. You know, I don't look at him like a hero. Should he get a TV show? Should he be a congressional intern? I mean, just stop all that nonsense.
I know. I hate
the thing
that.
That's interesting about this is not celebritizing him. And the right should be ashamed of themselves when they copy the left in celebritizing people for reasons that are not substantive. He acted legally in the moment to defend himself. I don't think he's a bad kid, but he's not like the new iconic figure in the conservative movement. They should stop it. It's nonsense. Madison Cawthorn and Paul Gosar and Matt Gaetz talking about you can be an intern in my office. Just stop it and stick to the specifics of the case and why it's so important for Rittenhouse, number one, because it was justice, and for self-defense, number two, because people have a God-given constitutional right to defend themselves. And with prosecutors like Kim Fox and John Chisholm up in Milwaukee County and Larry Krasner in Philadelphia and Chesa Boudin in San Francisco,
they care more about the victims.
They need that right to self-defense. They better have it.
Well, they care more about the suspects than the victims.
Philip in Blue Island.
Hi. My question is this. The group that Rittenhouse was with, right? I heard it was about maybe 8 or 9 other gunmen or whatever, vigilantes, whatever you want to call them. How did he get, I mean, why, what was so different? Was some of those guys black or were they all white or how did Rittenhouse get separated? And so those are the kind of questions I just need answers to.
He was asked by one of his friends. to help out. They were cleaning graffiti off the high school.
He's not asking why he was there. He's asking how did these confrontations occur? Because you had, Philip, a bunch of goons like Rosenbaum and Grosskurtz and Huber running around, making all sorts of threats, doing all sorts of vandalism, creating all sorts of havoc, and they singled upon Rittenhouse. There were shots fired before Rittenhouse ever fired his gun. So before Rosenbaum chased him down and tried to take his weapon away, he said he was going to kill him, Rosenbaum to Rittenhouse.
Right.
So this was chaos on the streets, Philip. What is difficult to understand? And then you see the video of who is pursuing who. And then you have testimony that substantiates the video of who was pursuing who and who raised first in the case of Huber. I mean, in the case of Grosskurtz, who raised first before Rittenhouse shot.
Huber was the one who hit him a few times.
I need
on
this and I need
skateboard.
That. By the way, this is the rise of white supremacy. This is the template. Oh, really? So is the acquittal of A.J. Coffey in Florida, is that going to be the rise of black supremacy? A.J. Coffey, people know this case? No, of course not. A.J. Coffey is a 20-something-year-old black man who was acquitted of second-degree felony murder and three counts of attempted murder of a police officer on Friday in Florida. Racist Florida. Black man. If he was a black man, he would have been killed on the streets by police, or he'd go to jail for life. That's what morons like Bubba Wallace had to say, who sees a noose in every garage pole. Oh, really? Well, A.J. Coffey's a black man who got acquitted when the sheriffs and a SWAT team busted through his home, and he thought he was
getting robbed.
Yeah. And they had a pole, and he thought the pole was a weapon, and he opened fire. The jury found that he reasonably acted in self-defense.
Yeah, you don't hear about that case.
Of course not. So is that the rise of black supremacy? Is that the new model where the A.J. Coffeys of the world can wait till the police bust down their doors and then open fire and try and kill police? Is that because that's exactly the sort of rhetoric that you're hearing about Kyle Rittenhouse from those MSNBC charlatans. So explain that case to me. There's a topic you won't hear on MSNBC, CNN, or just about anywhere else. John in Crown Point.
Hey, Dan and Amy. Love you guys. Love Amy more. Hey, I got a question. I noticed Kyle's mom was in the courtroom with them. I didn't see anybody else's family, like the two people who got killed. How come their family wasn't in the courtroom with them?
Well,
thanks, John.
One of the Huber, his great aunt was in there, and she was upset that nobody talked about the good things about her great nephew.
They stopped every attempt to say anything positive at all about any of the victims. None of them deserve the kind of treatment they've received.
No, why do you think they didn't talk about anything positive?
She's a family member. What's she going to say? Philip on the Northwest Side.
Yeah, good morning, Dana and Amy. She's probably the commonest of all of them. I think we should start naming all these communists.
Hey, Philip, you got to talk into the phone. I can't hear you.
Philip?
I'm sorry. I said good morning, Dan and Amy. We should start naming all these communist groups, and communist being my version. Their great aunt is probably the woman who molded this dumb man. Confuse them.
Well, we have no idea. But what's your point? Forget about her. What's your point?
My point is you're up against the Communist Party on multiple levels. When you look at the leader, one of the leaders of Black Lives Matter, Susan Rosenberg, okay, she was let out on Clinton's last day. She's supposed to be doing a 70-year bid, and now she's doing paperwork for BLM. These people are honestly like 60s communist revolutionaries, and I don't understand why these other people got shot, were carrying guns, that were looting, rioting. Why aren't they in jail? How come they're never charged? There's a blocking off streets for them and bringing their city services to paint lines on the streets and all these other things. This is your tax dollars at work. It never stops.
All right. Thanks for the call, Philip.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Maybe why so many on the left are trying to lionize those two individuals who were killed by Kyle Rittenhouse in self-defense. I mean, that's just where the left is. That's where the left is right now in defending sexual predators.
Yeah.
Like Joseph Rosenbaum, who was described by our very own Governor Spaulding as a father, and he, along with Anthony Huber, had their whole lives ahead of them.
Whole
they deserve to
ahead.
Be alive today.
Yeah.
Oakton College, because everybody has to weigh in on this. Everybody. Oakton Community College.
Oh, God. What? Seriously? All right, what did they have to say?
To the Oakton community. Oh. Right. I don't know what to think unless the administration of some school I attend weighs in. Many in the Oakton community deeply troubled by the outcome of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. For some, the not guilty verdict is re-traumatizing, invoking the pain and anger you experienced in the aftermath of Mr. Blake's shooting, which, by the way, also was a good shoot. But nevertheless, of course, that's missed by the Oakton community overlords.
Yeah, everyone forgets that he was armed and was trying to attack a police officer. But go on.
The tribal chief at Oakton. Given Mr. Blake's ties to the Evanston community, the fact that some of you know him and his family personally, this is especially painful. Yeah. Others understandably feel the defendant, who is white, was afforded treatment and privileges during his arrest and trial that are often denied to people of color, including Mr. Blake. This was a complicated case filled with difficult to interpret legal nuances, even for astute observers. Still, it reminds us how much work remains to dismantle the systemic racism that exists in our country, including in our justice system. Is that what it does? How does it do that? Reminds us to there's so much work to do to deal with systemic racism. How? What was racist about it? Or what where was race even an issue? Except shoehorned in by race hustlers like these con artists that apparently run Oakton College. Remarkable. But here's the thing. We understand this is a big deal because we're not using the right terminology. We keep calling Jacob Rosenbaum a pedophile.
Right.
That's the wrong terminology.
A serial child molester, I'd like to say, because that's what he is. But go on.
A proposal was put forward last week by the Sex Offender Management Board in Colorado. The board chairman, Kimberly Klein, explained the proposal, which is to not call somebody or have somebody register as a sex offender.
Well, what would they register as?
They're termed, and I don't know if they're still have to register. They're termed those who have been sexually abusive, because being a sex offender doesn't define me, man. Yes, I've been sexually abusive, but that doesn't make me a sex offender, Kimberly Klein.
Ultimately, it's about risk reduction. And so when we're talking about risk reduction, we're talking about reducing recidivism or reoffense. And so if we're doing that, that's coming from a very victim-centered standpoint. And I think everybody can get behind that.
Sure. If you work on the self-esteem of the sex offender, the pedophile, the sexual predator, then you reduce recidivism. I'd like to see the studies on that.
Now, what about the victims? I mean, they didn't choose to be victimized.
Michael Allen is a DA in Colorado Springs. He opposed the proposal.
Actions have consequences. And using the term sex offender recognizes the gravity of deviant sexual behavior committed against another person. This proposed change diminishes the harm done to victims of sex offenders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they earn that label because they're sex offenders and they should have that with them for the rest of their lives.
The proposal to change the terminology.
Yeah.
That proposal is moving forward. The Colorado State Board dropped sex offender term, calling it a negative label.
Well, yeah.
It's a negative label. The way sex offenders are labeled is negative. The board sets the standards to change the term sex offenders to reflect so-called person first language. You have to be person first.
What does that even mean?
Not behavior for sex offender. I'm a person who has been sexually abusive. Kimberly Corbin is a rape survivor. That's not person first language. She said it's very, very damaging to those people who are labeled when it has to do with race, gender, sexuality, ability, but those are not their choices. The biggest thing for me is these are choices that sex offenders made. Uh-huh. Well, again, is it even sex offense anymore?
What they prefer client, or what are the many options that they're going through?
Is it even an offense anymore? Old Dominion University professor placed on leave. I don't know why.
Oh, I saw this. This is
Alan Walker. His pronouns are they and them. He teaches sociology and criminal justice at ODU, the Monarch. Said minor attracted persons is the way to describe pedophiles. Because pedophile is stigmatizing. So we're stigmatizing Jacob Rosenbaum, and hasn't he been through enough, having been killed trying to maim or kill Kyle Rittenhouse already? Yeah. He wrote a book about this, did the good professor, A Long Dark Shadow, Minor Attracted People and Their Pursuit of Dignity. Finally, someone is championing pedophiles, although he's not the first one, actually.
I'll ask Mayor Lightfoot that today if she wants to change the name.
Ask her to ask Kim Fox.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
She's for the, because she defended them. You know, my condolences go out to the family, friends, and loved ones of the victims during this difficult time.
Professor Walker, from my perspective, there is no morality or immorality attached to the attraction to anyone because no one can control who they're attracted to. In other words, it's not who we're attracted to that's either okay or not okay. It's our behaviors in responding to that attraction that are either okay or okay or not okay. He said that child abuse is never, ever okay, but having sexual urges toward children isn't necessarily wrong as long as those carnal desires aren't acted upon. Yeah, that's a nice line that he attempts, or excuse me, they attempt to draw, Professor Walker. But this is just taking things step at a time. We've been down this right foot, left foot path on these issues before. Those who wanted to obliterate traditional marriage didn't start with the obliteration of traditional marriage. They started with civil unions. They use language very much like this. It's not about your urges or who you're attracted to. It's about your behavior. Mm-hmm. But then they said, well, you know, that these behaviors are morally equivalent. Then they said these relationships are morally equivalent. Then they said this relationship needs the same legal and cultural designation as an institution we said we weren't interested in changing. There has been a movement afoot for many years, and we've cited the op-eds on these pages because there are those at the tip of the spear who take the heat and suffer the opprobrium that Alan Walker is suffering now in order to advance the flag. So they tell you what this is and what this isn't. And when they tell you what it isn't, that's just preparing you for what isn't to become what is.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Matt in Oak Lawn, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. So kind of back to exactly what you're just saying. Over the weekend, I was joking around. Or not joking around. It's actually being quite serious. And I posted on Breitbart News that to a Steve Kerr article, you know, where he's patting himself on the back. He's the world's biggest genius, of course. And I said, you know, articles should actually read Steve Kerr patronizes or supports a pedophile walking through town with a gun and a legal firearm. And not only was that article or that comment not put on there, but the Facebook account that I used to post it got disabled. I got an email from Facebook saying you're out. I got kicked out of a club I didn't want to belong to.
Well, yeah, but you are saying something that is factually true. He's a convicted pedophile.
Yes. Steve Kerr is, you know, a guy who's selling kids, buy his jerseys and watch his games, is actually defending a pedophile walking through a town, destroying a town with a gun in his hand that he's not legally allowed to have. I mean, it's the most asinine thing a person can imagine.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Yeah, there are other celebrities that weighed in on this, too, that just like our very own Governor Spaulding, sort of look past the conduct of these individuals, both in their lives as well as the night of. I saw the esteemed actor Chris Ruffalo. We come together to mourn the lives lost to the same racist system that devalues black lives and devalue the lives of Anthony and JoJo.
What? Oh, my God.
Devalue the lives of Anthony and JoJo, convicted domestic abuser, convicted pedophile. Society devalued their lives. They didn't, through their predatory criminal conduct. Okay. Keith in Kankakee.
Yeah, good morning. Studies show that if you molest a child, you're just setting them up for failure later in life. Anybody who wants to normalize child molesting is pure evil.
I agree. Thanks for the call, Keith. Unfortunately, and just so people have eyes wide open, there are many who do not agree with that. As surprising as it may seem to some, there are people that want to normalize and sexualize children. By the way, you shouldn't be that surprised because most people are blithely ignoring the fact that their K through 12 school systems are actively working to sexualize children from kindergarten on up.
Yeah.
So what's one more jump to adults preying on children?
And back to Pritzker's statement, I mean, 800 people murdered in Chicago this year. How many times did he send thoughts and prayers out to them? You know, let's see. None?
No political points to be scored there.
So then he's doing it to child molesters. Okay.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We talked about the Rittenhouse verdict and the reaction and the protests over the weekend. That's domestically. Internationally, there were protests over the weekend, too, but it wasn't about the Rittenhouse verdict. It was about the reinstitution of lockdown policies in places like the Netherlands, Austria, Italy, Belgium. And lockdown policies that haven't been any more effective in Europe than they have in the United States.
Yeah, lockdown for everyone in Austria begins today, even if you're vaccinated, lockdowns.
We also got a report last week in Science magazine by a virologist at the University of Arizona, Michael Worobe, who concluded that COVID-19 originated in a wet market in Wuhan, China. So, you know, the plot thickens. It's another expert's opinion, and without delving too deep into the research, the interesting thing that's noted by one observer is, remember, the argument has been for much of the last year, wet market or Wuhan Virology Lab, the Wuhan Virology Lab that received grant funding from NIH, Tony Fauci knew or should have known this was happening, despite his testimony before Congress, particularly in exchanges with Rand Paul. But actually, if you go back to March of 2020, when COVID had sort of just become a thing and we were just beginning to move towards 2 weeks to slow the spread.
Well, I was already masked up and wearing gloves.
Yeah.
By January. But out of my mind.
In March of that year in Science magazine, Tony Fauci gave an interview with a reporter there named Joe Cohen, in which the reporter asked, "You have not said China virus ever." "You have not said China virus," and Anthony Fauci replied, "Ever." Question, "And you never will you?" "No," Tony Fauci. So at the very beginning, Fauci and the World Health Organization were
protecting China.
Well, they were resistant to make the connection between the virus's origination in China, period, much less the argument Wuhan versus wet market, Wuhan Virology Lab versus wet market. And then when it became clear that it originated in China, then we got into this, I still think it's the wet market, but I'm open-minded to other possibilities, even as he was actively dismissing other possibilities like the Virology Lab, as we know from email correspondence between Fauci and EcoHealth Alliance. This guy is a bad operator, and it's more than just about the pandemic in terms of somebody with this much power in the federal government. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined for our weekly confab with Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, VP of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation and author of the book Brutal War, Jungle Fighting in Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I think this the narrative you spun out really highlights a serious problem in the nature of American governance, which is, one is people ought to stay in their lane, and two is they ought to operate with credibility to gain and keep the respect of the American people. You know, I think Fauci's a good example of this, which is he's talking about all kinds of things that have nothing to do with the actual public health response, which is where he absolutely ought to be focusing all his comments. And the other thing is he has no credibility on this issue, particularly with regards to China, because he actually has, you know, a foot in the game, a stake in the game. The U.S. actually helped fund the virus of China, so he's not an independent observer. So he should recuse himself from really any of this. But, and it's not just COVID. We see this all the time. There was just a report out today from the Fed about how we should all be eating soybeans instead of turkey because the protein is, better and it's cheaper. And dude, I thought the Fed's job was to fight inflation.
Right. Well, I mean, it's a combination of the two. It's what you're talking about, but that's a function of the second thing you're highlighting, which is mission creep. So all of a sudden, right, you have these agencies that are involved in all sorts of things that run far afield from whatever the original vision was for the agency. And so you got Tony Fauci all over the place commenting on everything from, you know, economics to Jonathan Carl's book.
And then you have the Department of Homeland Security investigating school boards and the FBI tracking parents that show up at school boards. And what do all these things have in common? What drives this mission creep? And look, it's not the bureaucrats. They're very happy to take a paycheck and just do what they're told. It's politics. Mm-hmm. And it's the weaponization of our government for political purposes that is an accelerating trend that we saw under Obama and renewed under Biden, which I think is dangerous to good governance, and particularly in my issues of national security. You know, we want the military focused on defending America, not on implementing climate change agendas and, you know, all our, you know, woke agendas and everything else. I think this is a real fundamental, you know, screw up of our system that we've just got to get a handle on.
Yeah, but who's going to rein in the CDC? I mean, think about it. They were doing rent control for a while, and the CDC actually stopped a plane from taking off in Afghanistan because of somebody on board had the measles. I think the people board would rather have measles than die living there.
You know, I we've talked about this before. You know, when people go back to thinking about what are they voting for, and you know me, I'm not a political. I do policy. I don't do politics, but people tend to be issue voters. You know, I'm voting on how you deal with COVID, and the reality is all modern society, all these things are interconnected. You know, particularly American conservatives have to stop pretending like politics are a buffet table. And, you know, I'll take a serving of pro-life and, you know, a serving of low taxes, care about the other stuff, because all this other stuff is being weaponized. And if you're not sending the message to the people that you send to represent you in government that you don't stand for that anymore, it's going to continue and it's going to get worse.
And then what they're not focused on, or what they're surprised by in this case, China's hypersonic nuke fired a second missile mid-flight, leaving Pentagon reeling as experts say it defies science. The round-the-world hypersonic nuclear weapon apparently fired a second missile while traveling five times faster than the speed of sound. And this is something that Pentagon experts, our military and scientific experts, are surprised by. It's not good when we're surprised by what China is doing in the nuclear space.
I don't know why we're surprised. I mean, the United States developed all the fundamental science and engineering to build these technologies. So I don't know what's so shocking. And we, you know, the Chinese didn't even steal it. They just walked in and read it because it was openly available. And we did nothing. I mean, under, you know, Obama, when we finally got to the point where this technology was mature enough that we could actually start bending metal and building things, the Obama administration said, "Eh, not really interested. Never mind." And we gave the Chinese a half-decade lead. What do people think is going to happen?
And so the implications of what China is doing, though, the geopolitical implications.
I think we will – I mean, you have to develop a technology, then you have to field it, to train with it and build everything else. That takes time. You know, the generals say, and some of the scientists say, the U.S. is behind. Maybe true, but the reality is we have that science, we have the technology, we will build these things. China won't, in this aspect of competition, China won't create some kind of insurmountable lead as long as we keep to do this. So that's not the problem. The problem is, look at the president of the United States that we have now, who walked in the door faced with a significant military competition from China, and the first thing he did was put a defense budget on the table that didn't even match inflation. And that, my friend, was before inflation took off. The last numbers I looked at said, even in the best case scenario, the military is going to be $20 billion plus dollars short in its budget just because of the additional inflation in the last 3 months.
What's your reaction to the reactions to the Rittenhouse verdict from the left, particularly, I mean, that this is a left-right issue, the rule of law, self-defense, but the suggestion that this emboldens gun-toting conservatives, Trump voters, to, you know, open fire on people they deem to be others, you know, othering of people that are different than them.
Yeah.
Is that what's going to happen, or is it more likely that these professional agitators or worse, like Antifa and BLM, will be emboldened by the sort of rhetorical interference the left has been running all weekend in reaction to the verdict?
Yeah, this is a defiance of kind of fact-based public safety, which is essentially the left is trying to create a threat, which there is actually no evidence exists. I'm not trying to be partisan. It's not my fault that Black Lives Matter and Antifa are leftist organizations. But the fact is that they organized political violence on a mass scale, that they were covered and protected by leftist attorney generals around the country, and they paid no price for the massive destruction that they did. And the left's response to that was to go out and to create a doppelganger on the right so they had something to complain about. That's not reality. I mean, that's just playing politics with public safety. But, I mean, it doesn't seem like there are any taboos, right? There's nothing that you can't play politics with, no matter how serious it is, whether it's COVID or the economy or anything else. I mean, this is the nature of the public square today and how the left responds. And, look, you know, they say words have meaning in action, and I think people do take their lead from the president of the United States, who is the leader of their party and the de facto leader of their movement. And what do you see in the White House? Every day you see bold-faced lies with no apology, no excuse whatsoever, and they're statements which are made simply for political cover, which have no grounding in reality whatsoever. Look at this bill, that the big reconciliation bill that's out there. They're still insisting that it pays for itself and that the bill is essentially free, even though even leftist economists acknowledge that that's that's factually a lie. I mean, what happened to the fact checkers?
Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, Vice President of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation. The book, Brutal War, Jungle Fighting in Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, thanks as always.
All right. People should remind it's not a book about Washington.
Thanks. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Mayor Pete, who was Secretary of Transportation, he's that mannequin from the men's department at the Macy's in Mishawaka who escaped, ran for president, and then was appointed Secretary of Transportation. He sat down with that yapping terrier, Chuck Todd, to talk about the wonders of the forthcoming $1 trillion under his spending discretion to a significant extent, saying this. There's a particular word he uses that really riles me. See if you can pick it out.
We are supporting short-term action, but you're right, this isn't a stimulus like we had in 2009. This is about making sure that America is competitive for the rest of this century. We are, funding repairs that could begin almost immediately that mayors and states have been wanting to do for a long time. But we're building cathedrals here in terms of some of the bridge replacements or major projects of national significance.
Building cathedrals.
Cathedrals, that's exactly it.
Building, what does that mean?
Well, he's, you know, we're building these, you know, wonderful, culturally, economically important roads and bridges and other infrastructure, which, by the way, as we know, is a small part of the overall $1.2 trillion in funny money spend. But regardless, it's just such a government-centric way to talk about the world, to refer to public works projects as cathedrals. I don't know. It's just to tell. Maybe I'm being too persnickety about it, but I don't think so. I'm going to give myself the benefit of the doubt on this
okay,
one.
Good job, Dan.
Thank you.
I'm glad you had that talk with yourself.
Yeah, I think I was fair to myself, even-handed. Also, this, we have Biden the Fabulous has made a reappearance. Biden the Fabulous, who lies about his academic record, who lies about, I don't know, who he plagiarized speeches from, who lies about...
Corn Pop? Does Corn Pop really exist?
He has imaginary friends. He lies about even things like the tragic death of his first wife and daughter in that car accident where he says the driver was drunk and the driver was not drunk. Why do you lie about these things? Well, he lied again, and he lied about infrastructure, or he lied, I guess, to advance infrastructure. He said that fire destroyed a significant portion of his home in New Hampshire. And, you know, it's sort of, it was one of these, like, but for a bridge, it's a 10-mile detour to get to the other side. And I know, having had a house burned down with my wife in it, she got out safely, God willing, that having a significant portion of it burn, I can tell 10 minutes makes a hell of a difference.
Yeah, that's when he's on the bridge, you know, saying that this bridge helped, you know, save lives. Their house was struck by lightning in their kitchen.
Small fire contained to the kitchen, according to a 2004 report from the AP.
And Biden, it was out, fabulous. Put out by 20 minutes, yeah.
Biden the Fabulous, Biden the pathological liar. He's probably so feeble intellectually. I mean, he was feeble intellectually at 30. But this is a different sort of intellectual feebleness he's dealing with now. But he probably thinks that those things are actually true because he's lied about them for so long, and he's gotten away with those lies for so long. But I just thought I'd point that out just to remind people what a despicable human being he is. He's not just a dope. He's a despicable person, because only despicable people tell this many lies for this long in furtherance of their political career, to sort of make them out to be somebody more important or more interesting than they actually are. He's just such a disreputable figure. He makes me sick. But anyway, I digress. For more on the economics of all of this and a few other topics, please be joined by Christopher Whalen. He's an investment banker and chairman of Whalen Global Advisors. He's also the author of Ford Men, From Inspiration to Enterprise, and he's the editor of the Institutional Risk Analyst. Christopher, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Well, good morning, Dan. Good to see you're in such a happy mood.
Yeah, well, you know,
welcome
I gotta
to my
get
world.
Got to get all the poison out because so much of it needs to be delivered.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Start your morning with a good retch.
There yes, exactly, exactly. So, but what about that, you know, the infrastructure, that shouldn't be a bad word. It can be a bipartisan thing. We heard that from some of the big government Republican senators and members of Congress who folded in with the administration on this one. Are they right about this, that this $1.2 trillion is going to produce a returnable, a discernible ROI for the country?
No, infrastructure projects are notoriously difficult to measure when you think about equity returns and just is it good for society, is it good for the economy. They tend to have very low returns, but on the other hand, bridges and functioning infrastructure are clearly useful. They clearly do help the economy, but it's not the same kind of bump you get from private sector investment. Let's put it that way. It's mm-hmm. much lower. So it's necessary, it's a commodity, and it's needed. You know, we've been arguing about building tunnels across the Hudson River to replace the Civil War-era structures we have. And, you know, people just don't want to pay for this stuff generally until Uncle Sam shows up and sprinkles magic pixie dust and borrows a lot of money. And then, you know, the good times roll. So it's hard to separate the useful parts of this legislation. And there are some useful pieces, right? Like the guy said, there are governments out there that would like to do things that have already planned them, have already, you know, got everything ready. They just don't have the money. But then you have the social engineering by the Democrats, which is a very different thing. They want us to look like France without good food. That's essentially right. What they want.
Well, then, right. But President Biden keeps saying, you know, this is the solution to inflation. You know, inflation's going to go down. America's going to be better. Your life is going to be better starting
Oh, no.
Now.
No, no. We're going to think of Joe Biden in the same breath as the, you know, rulers of Argentina because, you know, the amount of money that the Fed has pumped into the system, first off, is already creating inflation. But if we get an uptick in the economy, if we get an uptick in what we call the velocity of money, you're going to see inflation gallop away. Now, the only thing that helps us, and we never talk about this, right, is that the rest of the world uses the dollar. And I don't just mean central bankers and the kind of stuff they talk about in classrooms. I'm talking about how we value real estate around the world. It's almost entirely dollars, other than authoritarian countries like Russia and China. You go all over Latin America, people get paid in dollars. They're indexed in dollars. So every time the consumer price index goes up in Chicago, everybody down in Uruguay and Brazil and Argentina gets a pay increase if their pay is set in dollars. So there's this vast demand around the world for these pieces of paper with dead presidents. But on the other hand, we're doing our best to try and undermine this system by spending money we don't have. And the Democrats, you can't even have a conversation with them about this anymore because they are so crazed and so focused on trying to draw attention to themselves that they will say and do anything.
Well,
you know, Elizabeth Warren, a great example of this.
Yeah.
She knows better. She's a smart lady, but she will say and do ridiculous things just to get the TV cameras to point at her for a couple of minutes.
Well, right. I mean, they say things that run afoul of like basic Econ 101 principles. So obviously some of them have to know that they're lying. But
well, let's go attack the banks so we can have higher economic growth. Right.
Right.
We've already neutered the big banks, but Elizabeth's not done. She wants to cut a couple arms and legs off.
Well,
you know, seriously, because you wonder why there's no growth. It's because we're making it up with small, new, nimble non-bank companies, which are great, but they don't have any money. All the money's in the bank, like, you know, Clarence Darrow said, right?
So. But so here's the question, though. They're in a bit of a trick bag, their lies notwithstanding. They can't lie their way out of economic reality completely. And so the trick bag is, well, inflation will subside once the Fed tapering ends the end of next year. But there may be an indication from the Biden administration that they don't want the Fed tapering to end. That's why Jerome Powell is going to be out and perhaps somebody like Brainard in. And so if they continue quantitative easing to prop up the market, then you're going to continue to see inflation pushed out for a longer period of time at the levels that we're at now or worse. So they have to pick a poison, don't they?
That's right. And they're faced with a lot of bad choices. So, for example, if we see $1.5 trillion get through the Senate and eventually they agree on the spending package, right? Treasury's got to go raise that money. We've had a couple of pretty bad auctions already this year where investors were not happy with what they were offered by the Treasury. And if we get a combination of higher inflation and lower growth, which is possible, you can have both, and then you have a new Fed chairman, Lyle Brainard, the great socialist from Maryland, who is not credible, you could see the dollar crater. You could see a lot of bad things happen that we have not seen in many, many years. We've been kind of on autopilot for decades, really. Because think about it, the Trump years is where the inflation started. Big budgets, cut taxes, you know, huge deficits, ridiculous deficits. And nobody cared. Everybody thought it was great. So now we get a bunch of Democrats in office who are less credible with the markets. And, you know, we could get to the point where we have a problem. And we haven't had a problem like this in 50 years, Dan. Well, so I think that, you know, there's a lack of awareness in the markets and a lack of readiness, in a sense, to deal with these issues, because we haven't had to deal with this stuff since I was a kid.
Right. We're only going to deal with them when we have to.
Well, yeah, but, you know, we assume we can always raise money whenever we want to. But that may not be the case. So we're pushing the envelope as hard as we can, and especially on the left. They have no idea, nor do they care. They don't care. Look at AOC. Do you think she cares about economics? No.
Or understands it? No.
That's what we're living with now. You're asking good questions, but nobody in D.C. is thinking about the answer. That's the bottom line.
What's the indicator for you? I mean, is it watch the 10-year when that goes up? It's time to exit stage left if you're in the market?
The tug of war has been between the Fed and the markets. If the markets take over and start to push interest rates up, despite the fact that there's huge demand for that paper because they've been buying bonds, as you said before, then we got a problem. Because if the markets become aware that the Fed is not in control, you could see the stock market lose 10-20% of its value, even though there's nowhere else to go. I mean, other than stocks and real estate, where do you hide? Crypto? You go play poker with the kids offshore? That's my description for crypto,
yeah,
by the way.
I got that.
That's good. We're speculating on the value of poker chips, okay? Because most of my buddies who trade crypto, what were they? Foreign exchange traders and professional poker players. That's who these people are.
But by the way, I noted that the Publix grocery stores in Florida and the Southeast, they're rationing some staples for the holidays like Gatorade and bacon.
Two staples of American life. Yeah.
No, that's
and they
that's
go my, so well together too.
That's my breakfast, so I'm particularly sensitive to that. So what does that say about where we are with like potential for real sort of medium term shortages, like we're talking about medium term inflation and perhaps stagflation?
Well, we certainly do have a lot of shortages around the country, depending on where you are and how the distribution system is working or not. You know, there are many, many shippers out there that are desperately looking for drivers. They can't get them. People aren't taking the jobs. They're not taking jobs in restaurants. They have pulled back. So I think you're going to see a lot of, if you will, bottlenecks in terms of supplies that consumers are used to just getting, especially around holiday time. And then the other thing is we could see lockdowns again. Look at Florida. Mr. DeSantis has dug himself quite a hole. And, you know, instead of doing the right thing and trying to minimize the problem, they have made it worse.
And can you explain that, please?
Well, look, my attitude is, unless you have a medical reason not to get vaccinated, go get vaccinated. I mean, otherwise, well, you know, we're basically saying that we're not going to take any measures. We're not going to have any state agencies involved. We're just going to let it go. And you're dealing with a population in Florida that's elderly, that's terrified. All my friends down there don't know what to do. They're all hiding in their homes. So, you know, to me, if you see public health officials have to force people into lockdown again, this economy is going to take quite a hit.
Well, yeah,
New York City.
Yeah, but it's COVIDians in places like New York City that are talking about that, not in Florida, where, oh, by the way, they have
We're not talking about that in Florida or Texas.
Well, you don't have to because there's not a need to it.
They also have the lowest case right. Per capita rate in the country in Florida. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the lockdowns.
At the moment. That's right.
Well, at the moment, but I mean, the lockdowns don't work. Just because politicians might do them doesn't mean that we should sort of act in furtherance of them doing them, sort of act accordingly. The hell with that. I'm not going to go along with some stupid public policy because it's seemingly the path of least resistance. And then they turn around and then they change the measurement by which we regain our freedoms anyway. I mean, that makes no sense. We've been doing that for 2 years.
We've buried a million people because of this virus. So, you know. At a certain stage, you have to recognize that there is a problem, but we still don't know how to deal with it. Honestly.
Well, I mean, before COVID hit, 8,000 people died a day in the United States of America from various diseases.
They still are.
Yeah, but are they dying from COVID or with COVID?
We don't know. We're not collecting any data.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah.
Well, the data we've collected, I mean, it's ridiculous.
There's just no evidence that what we've done has produced a positive net impact on life-saving or much less quality of life. That's the issue. I mean, in terms of it's the opportunity cost. It's not we're indifferent about people dying. It's a question of is what we're doing helping to save lives? And the answer, according to a number of studies, and Scott Atlas talked about this on Bart Roma yesterday, is no, we're not. So,
no, I mean, and you see that in Europe, too. I mean, there are certain countries that decided to essentially, reject lockdowns and everything else, and they initially had a very bad time, and then they ended up statistically looking like the rest of Scandinavia. We're talking about Sweden here,
right?
So you know, the answer to me, just speaking as an analyst, is we don't know.
We don't know.
Have any data?
But
so that's great as we head into the next winter. But I am sitting in the suburbs now.
Well, and the answer to me as a political hack is whatever New York is doing, I want to do the opposite.
Right.
Christopher Whalen.
Yes.
Yeah. Christopher Whalen, investment banker, chairman of Whalen Global Advisors, author of Ford Men from Inspiration to Enterprise, and editor for the Institutional Risk Analyst. Christopher, always good to have you. Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The police in Waukesha have now confirmed the identity of the person of interest we identified earlier in the show, this 39-year-old dude from Milwaukee who allegedly is the driver of the vehicle that drove through that crowd of Waukesha families enjoying Christmas parade, killing at least 5 and injuring at least 40 yesterday afternoon. This is an individual. He has not been charged yet. We'll wait to hear more from law enforcement. But this is an individual, what we know of him, in addition to a long criminal history, in addition to having bonded out as recently as Friday, in addition to enjoying apparently the beneficence of Chris Holm, the Milwaukee County DA, who's another Soros-backed local prosecutor like we have with Kim Fox in Cook County. We know from his social media posts that he commented on the Rittenhouse trial negatively in terms of the verdict. He had a picture and another social media post of Scott Walker dressed up as a Nazi. He had spoken positively about BLM. And so we don't know motive. He hasn't been charged yet, but what I've just outlined is what we do know. We also know we're getting reactions like this from the left. I love it when they show us who they are. Mary Lemansky is apparently the social media director, or was, of the DuPage County Democrat Party. Of course. She tweeted out a series on this. I'm sure he, meaning the driver in Waukesha, didn't want to hurt people. He came to help people.
What?
It's obviously a reference to Rittenhouse.
Oh.
She goes on to say, to tweet, "You reap what you sow." It's sad people died, but when you open the door to vigilante justice, everyone seems threatening. Hmm.
We don't know the circumstances of this, and you have to wait it out before you make stupid, idiotic comments like that.
Well, she is a perfect every woman for your leftist suburban white chick.
Take off your pea hat and open your ears. How about that? Because this is a witness who was on the ground and describes what happened.
We saw him swerve right into the children from the baseball team, the parents that were marching with him. The one father of the baseball team had pushed his child out of the way, and he took the blunt end of the vehicle. He went down, and all chaos just erupted.
And a lot of the injured had to drive themselves to the hospital because there was, you know, it was just chaotic.
So we'll continue to keep the case updated, and well as Mike Scott and our news team will all day as the situation develops. But for more on the topic and, of course, the Rittenhouse verdict, pleased to be joined by Congressman Brian Stile. He's a Republican congressman for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, which, of course, covers Kenosha. Brian, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
I know Waukesha is not your district, but obviously, as a cheesehead, I'm sure you want to comment. So, you know, your reaction to what happened yesterday and what we know to this point.
Yeah, just absolutely heartbreaking to see what should be and has been a family-centered event become this tragic. I talked to one gentleman who was in the parade. He just finished and started walking the parade route back to get to his car when the car that drove by him. Horrific scene. One of the images that really stood out in my mind was an abandoned stroller. You can just imagine the fear that so many parents were having as this car was coming through. You hope it's a mom or dad who was able to snatch their kid and get them to safety, but you just don't know. So many lives lost, so many individuals injured. And now is really a time to stand with the men and women of law enforcement as they're going through and making a thorough investigation to make sure we get everybody involved in this, the individual or individuals, and then ultimately fully hold them accountable. And so I think what's so important is instead of the statements that we're seeing on social media that you just highlighted, instead we pause, we reflect, we stand with law enforcement, we allow them to conduct their investigation, and then we allow the Justice Department to truly hold this person accountable and punish them appropriately for their actions.
We know, we got a note from a friend, the Archdiocese of Milwaukee reporting one of their priests and multiple Catholic school children are among the injured in Waukesha. The cousin of a friend of mine's friend, also badly injured. She's only 3 years old. So we know that there were children that were seriously injured or worse in addition to adults. And so, as you say, wait for law enforcement to identify the individuals. But this is going to be bad.
It's absolutely heartbreaking. The congressional district line goes up to the village of Waukesha, which is the border with the city. And I just can't tell you how many people, everybody in this community either was at the parade, in the parade, or knows somebody who was. And it is just heartbreaking for the city of Waukesha and the broader community.
I want to get your reaction moving over to the Rittenhouse verdict and this exchange between Rittenhouse's defense attorney Mark Richards and Fredo Cuomo on CNN on Friday night after the verdict, talking specifically about Rosenbaum, because it's Richards' contention, basically, the state brought the case mainly because of Rosenbaum. That was the trigger that got them to bring charges, in his opinion. But he and Cuomo went back and forth about Wisconsin state law as it pertains to self-defense.
His judgment in running after a person, as he yelled on the tape, and it was clearly visible, "You aren't going to do SMF-er." And he believed Kyle didn't have the guts to do it. He was wrong, and he paid with his life.
Well, I don't know that it's guts. I think it's bad judgment. It was justified under the law, but I think it's hard, and that's why I asked the question. It's hard to believe that somebody chasing you is going to beat you to death.
Why else was he chasing him, Chris?
Probably to get him and beat him up, hurt him. But again, my problem is with the law here. We don't know what he was going to do. All we know now, we do, because now we know that none of the people involved here ever killed anybody before or known for that kind of violence. But he didn't know that in the moment. This law,
Yeah, Chris Cuomo is a muddled mess, but Brian, you're hearing this, you know, the no duty to retreat, and that the Wisconsin law as it pertains to self-defense is somehow so markedly different than self-defense laws in other jurisdictions. Your comment on that?
Yeah, what we have seen is the jury actually review the facts and reach a unanimous conclusion. And so in the United States, you're tried under the court of law, not under the court of public opinion. And so many on the left want to try Kyle Rittenhouse under the court of public opinion. We are a country of laws, and we need to be. I think what's so important is we also need to reflect on why was everybody there in the first place? They were there because our Democratic liberal governor refused to provide the resources that were needed to reestablish public safety for three nights in a row. Nobody should have been on the street, and we could have prevented that had we provided the resources that were needed. We need to remember that Tuesday morning, our Democratic governor, Tony Evers, rejected an offer of assistance from President Donald Trump to help to end the violence in the first place. None of this would have occurred if our Democratic governor, Tony Evers, had done his job.
And now you've got, you know, Jacob Blake's uncle was out there, Bishop Travis Grant, saying that they're going to hit you guys economically. This is what they said last night during their march.
This is a new day. Those who finance this defense, those who are using him as a poster child for justice, mm-hmm. you've just awakened a giant.
There you go.
You've just awakened the conscience of a people mm-hmm. that will not take no for an answer.
So what do you make of that? And what, you know, they're going to economically boycott Kenosha too?
It's hard to figure out what everybody's trying to say here on this. What we should walk away with is an understanding that the people that actually reviewed the facts, 12 individuals randomly chosen in Kenosha County, reviewed the facts of the case, applied it to the law, and unanimously determined Kyle Rittenhouse was not guilty. It's a moment to say, let's respect the rule of law. Let's respect the outcome of the jury. Rather than trying to continue to make up the facts, create them, try individuals under the court of public opinion, we are a country of laws. Let's move on. Let's allow Kenosha to move on and actually come back and build better. We don't need people coming into the community of Kenosha with their thoughts and opinions and hurting the community even more than it's already been damaged by this case.
Well, but it's also important to make sure we have sort of an understanding of self-defense so people know where the lines are, what the law is, and aren't confused about that. That's why this case was so important beyond Rittenhouse's fate. It's the question of the rule of law and a person's ability to provide for their own self-defense. And when you have Chris Cuomo and, frankly, the prosecution suggesting that, you know, that you have some moral obligation to take a beating, that's just a remarkable statement. Again, in Wisconsin, yes, there's no duty to retreat, but the standard is very similar to the standard in most jurisdictions, which is reasonable person. If the person reasonably believes, so that's the reasonable person standard, reasonably believes that he could suffer serious bodily harm or death, then he has the ability to defend himself. And that was what the jury concluded in this case, that it was reasonable for Rittenhouse to do what he did in the context.
Absolutely, right? And the jury reached a unanimous verdict after reviewing all the facts. And so there's many on the left that have just been making completely dangerous and irresponsible comments, many of them providing facts that are not true, rather than analyzing the case and respecting the jury's verdict. If you actually look at the facts of the case, I think the outcome of the jury is not terribly surprising. But what many on the left want to do is create their own series of facts and try him in the court of public opinion, not helpful to anyone.
I wanted to get your reaction to this New York Times, former New York Times reporter Nellie Bowles, saying that the New York Times held a story about the Kenosha riots until after the 2020 election. She had done a story that was supposed to be how, oh, it's no big deal that businesses are burned down because they all have insurance. And she writes, it turned out not to be true. The part of Kenosha that people burned in the riots was the poor, multiracial commercial district full of small, uninsured cell phone shops and car lots. It was very sad to see and hear from people who had suffered. That was her report that was spiked until after the election. Now, you know, the obvious disgust that the New York Times deserves for being in the tank for the Biden administration and not wanting any negative press about what rioters had done to a community. But part of Kenosha that she's referencing in her report that finally got published, what is the state of that area of Kenosha now?
You know, Kenosha's come back a long ways, but it still has room to grow. I remember walking downtown through the 4th of July parade, and there was one building that stuck out in my mind that still was boarded up and spray painted on the boards and said, "Don't burn this building. People live here," with an arrow pointing up. There's an apartment above, you know, the commercial space on the ground floor. You got to remember the individuals and the criminals that were rioting, that were burning buildings, were doing so and risking the lives of regular people that were living in these apartments. Many people who had nothing to do with the event in the first place, or none of them who did. It was absolutely despicable. And so the scars following three nights of rioting like this last a long time. But overall, Kenosha's come back well, but there's still room to go. And now that the Kyle Rittenhouse case is in the rearview mirror, hopefully the community can really continue to come together and rebuild stronger than ever before.
I mentioned Chris Holm, the DA in Milwaukee County, in connection with that Waukesha massacre yesterday, and his treatment of the person of interest in previous criminal cases, including bonding him out for $1,000 on Friday. What about the DA in Kenosha, Gravely? Where has he been?
Oh, that's right.
When is he going to be called to account for approving charges and the pursuit of this case to begin with? Where is he going to be held to account to answer for the performance of his prosecutors, the case they put on? Where is this guy?
You're asking a great question, and why is he not out front owning this? But what we see from prosecutors across the country, whether or not it's Milwaukee or Kenosha, or you guys deal with this in Cook County all the time, is prosecutors not willing to actually bring charges against true criminals, but are rather willing to grandstand on one-off cases. We see it time and again where criminals are given an easy pass. They come back out. They offend again. They make our communities less safe. We cannot stand with some of these woke prosecutors. We actually have to enforce the rule of law and allow our communities to become safe once again, as we see the significant crime wave travel across the United States through all of our major cities.
He is Brian Stile. He's a Republican congressman for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, right over the border, Kenosha, and surrounding areas. Brian, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, good luck to you and your community. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word APP to 64636 to download the app today.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Tony Fauci took time away from the Jonathan Karl book tour, which he apparently has been on with Carl. He was there in D.C. Wasn't wearing a mask, even though there's still an indoor mask mandate in D.C. effective today. And
really?
he was quoted in The Hill as telling somebody, "Oh, I'm only wearing a mask for people I don't know. You know, for people if I'm talking to people I know, then I'm not wearing it."
Nice. There's different rules for him, really?
Yeah, that's not the mandate. The mandate isn't for people you know versus people you don't know. It's just an indoor mask mandate, but he's our better, so of course I defer to him. He was on with Martha Raddatz on This Week talking about, have we yet redefined being vaccinated as including the booster shot the way that the governors of Connecticut and New Mexico have redefined it? Here's what Fauci said.
Let's talk about later on. Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla recently said there's a high chance boosters would be needed annually. Do you think that's a possibility, or do you believe it might be even sooner, like every 6 months?
You know, we follow the data, and it's so easy to predict, Martha, about how often you would need it. We would hope, and this is something that we're looking at very carefully, that third shot with the mRNA not only boosts you way up, but increases the durability so that you will not necessarily need it every 6 months or a year. We're hoping it pushes it out more. If it doesn't, and the data show we do need it more often, then we'll do it. But you want to make sure you get the population optimally protected, and you do whatever you need to do to make sure you do that. My hope as an immunologist, as an infectious disease person, that maturation of the response increasing its strength and power will be followed by a greater durability. That's what I'm hoping for. If it doesn't happen, we'll act accordingly.
Uh-huh. And so they're following the data, and so they're not ready to redefine what vaccinated means quite yet. The data will determine. But, I mean, they're moving pretty quickly along with pretty flimsy data. I mean, what do we have, 30 to 45 days of lived experience of Israeli citizens who've gotten the booster? The data sets they're using to base sweeping recommendations, much less mandates, pretty flimsy. And Dr. Scott Atlas was on with Maria Bartiromo. You remember him, former neuroradiologist from Stanford, who was on President Trump's task force briefly towards the end. He commenting on that, just exactly what I was saying about data related to the boosters. And then also just a reminder about the lockdown policies and what we know to be true from research into the impacts of those lockdowns, given that we have Western European countries locking down again.
The data shows the following. Bjornskov's study of 24 European countries, the lockdowns did not reduce the deaths during the pandemic. That was spring 2021 study. A January 2021 study from Stanford's Ben David and colleagues, lockdowns failed to stop the spread of the infection. In fact, Ioannidis, one of the authors, said it was, quote, pro-contagion, increasing infections. And the most important study was National Bureau of Economic Research by RAND in June this year. Everyone should look at it because they showed analysis of 43 countries and all the states that lockdowns increased the excess deaths during the pandemic. Earlier lockdowns increased the deaths during the pandemic. And when lockdowns were instilled, deaths were coming down and the deaths started increasing when the lockdowns were implemented. So the Birx-Fauci lockdowns, which was the advice of the task force the entire year, failed to stop the spread of the infection. They failed to stop the dying, and they destroyed millions and millions of people, particularly low-income families.
And it'd be nice to learn something from that, not just for our own edification, but also because you have domestic politicians in this country that are keeping open the possibility of going the way of Austria and the Netherlands and Belgium if cases spike. I mean, look at the pressure that Jared Polis, the governor of Colorado, Democrat, is under right now because of a handful of doctors saying our emergency rooms are overwhelmed with the spike in the number of Delta COVID cases that Colorado is currently experiencing.
Yeah, but they just recently fired 3,802 nurses because they weren't vaccinated. So you reap what you sow, because that factors into this, too. And people don't realize that when they say that their hospitalizations, you have to look at how the percentage of nurses that can be, you know, assigned to each hospital bed that factors in with this. That no one seems to be talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean,
you reap what you sow, folks.
Right. I mean, is there any learning going on?
No.
It's like every day is sui generis. It's COVID day one, and it's just pronouncements. Why? Because we said so. By the way, one good development. You know, every business solves a problem. There's a job board up, and I know some people have been laid off because they refused to get vaccinated. A worker at a code company in Lubbock, Texas, launched a job board, novaxmandate.org. It's an online job board to help connect the unvaccinated worker to employers who are in need of more help. Novaxmandate.org for those who are looking. I just wanted to point attention to that. And then there's something else, too. And we had this little back and forth with Christopher Whalen about, you know, just get vaccinated. Well, you know, not every promise of the vaccine is failing to deliver. It doesn't prevent you from getting infected. It doesn't prevent you from transmitting. And it's becoming an open question whether it prevents serious illness or death in a statistically significant manner, particularly for younger people. And now we have this story out of England from our friend Alex Berenson. This is British data, British government data. Vaccinated people under the age of 60 are twice as likely to die as unvaccinated people. And overall deaths in Britain are running well above normal. He writes, I don't know how to explain this other than vaccine-caused mortality. Hmm. And he's got to chart it. Now, you know, you're still talking about small numbers. but at least we're going to be honest and put these numbers in context in terms of the rate of death per 100,000. You know, it's 1.5 to, you know, sort of it's 1.5 to 2 to sort of like 2.5 to 3 in 100,000. So that's the doubling, twice as likely. Now, put it in context, the risk for anybody in that cohort is low. And this is the kind of context you don't get from the COVIDians when they're talking about data. You get it from us. But still, that is a curious thing. The vaccinated 10 to 59 years old dying at a rate per 100,000, twice what the unvaccinated are, same age group in England, according to the government's data. For more on all of this, as Illinois state government is kicking off our holiday vaccine campaign for the kids, all I want for Christmas is my two front teeth and a booster shot. Pleased to be joined by our friend John Tierney from City Journal. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, Dan. Thanks.
So you have recently written about this a crusade to get children vaccinated, and you have the likes of Tony Fauci talking about essentially getting to in utero vaccinations at some point. and you just say basically it fails on every account, the evidence in terms of protection as well as the ethics of mandating this.
Right. I mean, vaccinating young children, I think, is a new ethical low in this pandemic. You know, we've asked children to sacrifice the whole time. We've imposed needless sacrifices on children the whole pandemic, you know, closing schools, making them wear masks. And now asking them to be vaccinated, it just flunks the basic test of ethics. You know, we know that this risk to children is lower than the flu. There have been very few children who died, you know, and even the numbers that they have is lower than the flu. And even those numbers are an overcount because a lot of the so-called COVID deaths are actually, they're not suffering from COVID. They have other conditions. They just happen to test positive. So we know that children, they don't transmit to adults, you know, nearly as much. We've seen places like Sweden that kept the schools open, no masks, no dividers, no social distancing. Without spreading the disease, without hurting the children. So we know they don't need it. And yet we're asking them to take this vaccine, and we don't really know what the side effects are for children. I mean, you know, there was one clinical, very small clinical trial, and it wasn't big enough and it wasn't long enough to know what kind of potentially rare and severe side effects there are. And it's simply, I mean, if a drug company tried to introduce a drug like this for children that offers them virtually no benefit and with unknown side effects, we would say, of course you can't do that. That's unethical.
Well, asking them, we're paying kids to do it. I mean, there's a push here. Like, you want to get your mom and dad something for Christmas? Get a vaccine shot. They'll come to your house and give you $50 a pop, and then they'll come back again and give you another $50 when you get the second shot.
Well, you know, it was just appalling in New York where Bill de Blasio happily announced that they're paying children $100, and even said it'll buy you a lot of candy. I mean, it's astonishing that, you know, that we've sunk to this level, and we've got Sesame Street's Big Bird, you know, propagandizing children. You really want to get this shot? I mean, it's just so
surreal.
Unethical. And the more we learn about this, also, you know, the one thing that we've learned about the vaccine now is that it seems pretty effective at preventing hospitalization and death, but it's not so great about preventing reinfection. I mean, I had the vaccine, and I got the Delta variant and gave it to my wife. I mean, it was like the flu; it wasn't the end of the world. But we know that, you know, people who've been vaccinated can get reinfected and transmit it, and, you know, after a few months, the effect seems to wane. So we're asking children to go through this that might, you know, that might have a minuscule effect for a few months. They're actually better off. And already it's likely that more than half of children already have natural immunity.
Right.
More than half of children
just like,
have already had COVID.
Just like 146 million people have natural immunity, according to the CDC, but that doesn't matter. So what happens? What happens when we get to, you know, the 5 to 11 population, when we get to 73% or whatever the number is now vaccinated? Then what's the next thing?
It'll just be booster shots endlessly. I mean, the kids are actually probably better off, and it's better off for everyone, for the children and for preventing transmission, if they get natural immunity, because that's, you know, we've seen lots of studies that is stronger and more durable.
So it's, you know, forced in to get this vaccine that doesn't give as good immunity. It just makes no sense on any level. It really is just something to placate these adults. I was listening to Ed Scott Atlas there. I'm reviewing his new book for City Journal, and it's really just an appalling account of malfeasance in Washington. It was really clear that Deborah Birx is the real villain of the book. I mean, she's the one who drove these lockdowns. But it's astonishing how she and Fauci and Redfield, this troika, as Atlas calls them, they just dominated on the COVID task force. And they had no interest in debating the science. They never discussed the collateral damage. It was just an incredible, gang of three stooges that were running this thing. And the idea they were following the science is just completely wrong.
And the malfeasance.
They were paying no attention to the science.
And the malfeasance continues, unfortunately. John Tierney, contributing editor of City Journal, former New York Times reporter and columnist, co-author of the book, The Power of Bad, How the Negativity Effect Rules Us and How We Can Rule It. John, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.